It was on Central Avenue that the memories started coming back. I was smoking a Camel cigarette from a new pack that I picked up at a liquor store along the way. The window was open, and the air whipped around the inside of that barracuda like a man-made tornado. Aretha Franklin was belting out Otis Redding's song, Respect, on the radio, and I was feeling only slightly anchored to the world that I had left behind. Down Tucker Street, in the heart of Compton, if you drive far enough, you come to a dead end. The asphalt turns to hard, yellow soil. 30 feet after that, a seemingly impenetrable stand of avocado and eucalyptus trees blocks the way. Through and beyond the trees are dense bushes, many of them with thorns. If you push past the bushes, you come to an unexpected door that seems like just another part of the forest, a yellow door with green lichen growing on it. I stopped there to consider my actions. This was not a threshold that one, even a man in my condition, crossed lightly. I waited a moment, and the door opened of its own accord. Joe was taller and darker and more substantial than I was even before the accident. She was in her 60s, but might have been 40, except for the heavy toll experience had left on her dark eyes. "I wondered when you was gonna get here easy," she said in a strong tenor voice that man or woman would have been proud of. I inhaled, taking in the strange odors of the backwoods alchemist's lair. The smells were sweet and bitter, vegetable and mammal, fish, and also the deep, rich odor of the earth in its various refined guises. I exhaled, feeling that the breath coming out of me carried an imprint of my soul that the house itself would study and pass judgment on. "Come on in, easy," Mama Jo offered. "Take a weight off them shaky legs." Mama Jo's home was like no other in Southern California, one generous room that performed every function of a house and a backwoods clinic. The floor was packed earth, and the furniture could have been built by peasant hands in Europe's dark ages. There was a hearth with a mantelpiece that had 13 skulls on it. 12 were armadillo heads, and one was Domak, the father of Joe's only child and the one true love of her life. She had a pet raven moving back and forth on its T-shaped oak stand, and 2 live armadillos that stayed to the corners of the wide room. I saw something else move in the shadow under her long work table, but failed to make out the species. "Sit down over here, baby," she said. I lowered myself into a chair made from arm-thick branches and animal hide. It was the chair I most often used at Joe's house. Joe sat down on the bench placed at her work table. Behind her were dozens of crocks and jars, hanging bunches of dried leaves and branches, and more than a few hand-bound volumes. There was barely 6 inches of space between our knees. Joe reached out for my hands, and I gave them, willingly, focusing my eyes on her bare feet. "Easy," she said. And I looked up. We sat there for an interminable period, passing breath and feeling between us. My hands began to sweat, and that was just another form of communication. After a long time, Joe blinked twice and let me go. "It's like you was dead out there in them bushes, Easy," she said. I nodded and sighed. "You were down there in the pit, and it was Raymond's love that dragged you out. You two is just like cheering on a seesaw. One of you is up and the other one down. That's how it goes." I grinned, but had no words to say. "Man is an animal, Easy," Joe continued on her impromptu and yet ready sermon. Bobcat can have the biggest fight of his life on a Tuesday noon, and win or lose, either way, on Wednesday, if he's still alive, he'll need water and meat to survive. It's a good thing that you run up off of that cliff. A good thing. Because when you hit the bottom, there is only one place left for you to go. You know that, don't you? I don't know a goddamn thing, Joe, I said, unable to keep my anger in check. Not a fucking thing. You know you tried to kill yourself, and that death threw you back. He held you in his hand a minute, and then said, maybe. I laughed deeply in spite of the pains in my chest and back. The idea of the absolute looking at life and tossing it aside sounded so right that it was almost unbearable. I'm looking for somebody for Raymond, I said when the laughter subsided. Evander Noon. That's just the seesaw action, Joe replied. You looking for yourself. I'm not sure if it's for Evander or me, I said, knowing that there was no arguing metaphysics with her. All I do know is that I walked a block and a half yesterday and nearly collapsed, and here I got miles up ahead of me. And that's why you come here? You gave Mouse this little vial for hangovers, I said. Hangover ain't like dying, she replied. That's just a little pick-me-up after a night out. You got something stronger? I asked. There's health in your body, sugar, and death in your soul. I can give you something help to see you through this thing, but I can't tell whether you're going to come back alive or not. All I know is if I stop right now, I will be dead in a week. I know it. Joe's hard, black face cracked into a girlish grin. I knew when you was just a teenager that you were going to be one hell of a man, Mr. Rawlins. You look at the world and see what's there. You know there ain't one person out of 300 could lay claim to half of that. Joe got up and turned around to reach for something on a high shelf above the long and deep work table. I had been looking almost only into her eyes since entering the cottage, either that or her workwoman's feet and near feral pets. Joe had the kind of will that kept you engaged. But when she turned, I noted that she was wearing an almost festive yellow dress that came down to the middle of her calves. She had dressed for company. She had dressed for me. Here we go, she said. She handed me a wooden crate divided into 8 3-inch square sections. In each slatted section was nestled a little green bottle, all of them stoppered with hand-cut cork plugs. The liquid inside the bottles was dark and thick. I call this here gator's blood, Joe said as she regained her seat. That there's some powerful juju. You take yourself a nap, and then if you feeling weak, you drink down one bottle. After that, you'll be good to go for whatever time your condition will allow. When you get tired again, don't take another bottle until you done fall to sleep and woke up naturally. It's some powerful shit easy, so don't think you can break them rules. But if you do what I say, not only will this medicine give you strength, but it will help you heal. This is great, Joe, I said. Just what I wanted. I was wondering if you had some tarball stew. What for? I don't have any trouble falling asleep, but the dreams I've been having are sometimes too strong. And if I remember right, those tarballs cut down the strength of dreams. They up on the shelf. But let me make you some tea right now. I think that would be the right thing. Joe sat me on her hemp-padded sleeping cot and pulled the chair I'd been sitting in up next to it. She served me a sour-smelling, sweet-tasting tea in an earthenware cup that might have been a century old. I took a sip and yawned.
"It's good to see you, Easy," Joe whispered.
"It's good to be here."
I took another sip, and my eyes felt like they needed to close.
"You can't fight with death," she said. "All you can do is stand your ground and hope that the foundation don't fall out from under you."
"Can you get word to Juice and Feather that I'm here and that I'm all right?" I said, as she took the cup from my hand.
"I'll tell them that you're here," she said,
and I fell on my side, sleep coming up around me like high tide. I came awake alone in Joe's Compton cottage. She was nowhere to be seen. I didn't know if it was day or night, because Joe's place had no windows, and it was always lit by oil lanterns and candles. Breezes came through the walls and ceilings to ventilate the place, but I never knew how this process was achieved. On the work table, there was a plate of food under a flat-topped crystal cover. Standing on this glass protector stood a cat that had pointed ears like a lynx, but weighed no more than 5 or 6 pounds. The feline hissed at me, and I laughed. I really enjoyed the soul food repast: pigtails, dirty rice, and collard greens cooked with ham hocks and finished with white vinegar. My stomach hardly complained. There was a cola bottle with a bottle opener next to the plate. Next to the meal sat the wooden tray of gator's blood bottles with 5 rice paper-wrapped lumps, which looked like tar balls, wedged in between them. I took one of the bottles, teased out the cork plug, and drank the contents, 5 or 6 ounces, in one draft. The concoction tasted like equal parts hard cider and swamp mud. The medicine was astringent against my tongue and throat. It felt like acid burning away the lining down to my stomach. This burning, which was at first painful, quickly spread through my chest, out along my arms, and finally up into my head. I broke out into a sweat and stood up, because I had to. I rose to my full height in the middle of Joe's place, shivering, witnessed by the avian, feline, and rodent roommates of the absent southern witch. The heat in my chest turned to hilarity, and the being in my soul was momentarily transformed into a hyena when the moon is full and the hunt is on. After 30 minutes or so, I was feeling better than I had in years. It was nighttime outside. There was a warm breeze blowing, and the sky was both clear and black, except for a few stars. I put the remaining gator's blood bottles and tar balls in the trunk of the red barracuda, and then attended to the sky for a minute or two more. I drove until coming to a World Gas station, where I used the payphone to call the Bel Air house.
"Hello?" Feather answered.
"Hey, baby girl."
"Daddy?"
"How are you?" I asked my daughter.
"Fine. Mama Jo called and said that you were taking a nap at her house. Are you okay?"
"Sure. Why?"
"Why? Because you had that accident. You just got out of the bed yesterday morning."
It hadn't yet been 2 days, but it felt like there were months between me and the partial coma. "I'm going up to the Sunset Strip to do something for Uncle Ray," I said. "Don't worry about me. Joe gave me some of her special medicine, and I'm as strong as a bull."
"You sound funny, Daddy."
"That's the medicine working. It makes me feel good."
"You should come home," Feather said.
"And I will, just as soon as I finish this job for Ray. Don't worry, Feather. I will come back to you, and I will answer every question you have about where you came from before you came to us. After that, I jumped into the borrowed car and blazed my way toward the future.